It's time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cyclists, trails, travel, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. You can subscribe to our weekly podcast at OutspokenCyclist.com or through your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for October 9th, 2021. Sea Otter is in full swing this weekend, and I thought it would be a good idea to grab one of the stars of our sport who's attending the festival and see what he's up to. My first guest is Jeremy Powers. Jeremy is without a doubt the winningest dude in cyclocross history. During his career, he racked up 90 UCI victories, 4 USA Cyclocross Championships, and the 2015 Pan American Championship. He has such a long history of philanthropy in the sport as a major piece of the JAM Fund, which gives grants to riders who live within hours of the community of the Northampton Cycling Club in Massachusetts. He spent 2 years commentating on the Global Cycling Network, and now he's working with Whoop, one of the most innovative fitness wearables on the market today. Then it's off to Pittsburgh to speak with Ted Rogers and Steve Ewing from Aerotech Designs. Their story is well worth the tell, and their products are, in my not-so-humble opinion, excellent. So first, it's Jeremy Powers. He has to be one of the most enthusiastic and optimistic people I've had the privilege of speaking with in a long time. You can hear it in his voice as he tells us about his kids, his work, and his thoughts about cycling today. Hi, Jeremy. Welcome back to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Dan, thank you so much for having me again. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, we have not had a conversation since 2016.
Yes. Well, life was quite a bit different for me then.
Let's catch up a little bit. Tell me about what's been going on the last 5 years.
Yeah, well, it's a lot. A lot has happened. I've retired from racing, and when I was retiring, you know, that was a beautiful chapter of my life. We had so many great memories and partnerships and friends and things that were made along the way. And, you know, you can't race like that forever. At that time, I was 35 years old. So being able to switch from that to when I left racing, I moved to Global Cycling Network and was a presenter there for 2 years. And I did commentary and different things, mainly around, all things cycling. I got to do some beautiful trips, but I really got to chase my passion around like cyclocross and storytelling there. So that was super fun for me. And I learned a lot. And then I'm now working at Whoop. So my professional life was pro bike rider. Then I went to GCN. And then now I'm working at Whoop, looking after all the cycling things that they're getting involved with. And on my personal side, I had a son. So we had a son just after that in 2016 when we last spoke. And then I also have a baby girl, a daughter as well now during the pandemic. So two children since we last spoke, which is also a huge deal if there's any other parents out there listening.
That changes your life a little, like 120%. Yes, been there, done that. So I do want to talk about Whoop. I want to talk about Sea Otter first. You're there. I should have been there, but I got chicken and didn't want to get on a plane. So I'm going to vicariously live Sea Otter through you. So tell us about what's going on in Monterey. Sea Otter opened yesterday. We're talking on Friday. Actually, yeah, day one. I just read the day one synopsis. How'd it go?
I mean, yeah, it's really great when you think about, you know, a venue that would be okay during a time like this. It's really, really convenient for that because it is all outdoors. And, from the risk standpoint, I think is rather low, although probably not non-existent. But I think you're being mindful, being outside is the best way to do things at this time. So a lot of open air tents and a lot of vendors that are here, of course, also in open air tents. The cycling community is generally pretty, up with the times. So I think taking good care, there's a lot of sanitizer and things like this. So from a safety standpoint, If you can get here, it is really nice. You know, it's the venue because of things is set up a little differently. It's a lot wider. There's more space, but everybody, you can still see a lot, and there are a lot of vendors here. So it's as beautiful as it always was. And yeah, it's in a different time of the year, right? So it's not in the spring, it's in the fall. And so the breeze is a little different, but it still is the venue where you're cold, but hot at the same time because of the wind and because of its openness. And also the thing that doesn't leave is the kind of eyes wide open, like Vegas thing where you're staring and you're like, you're almost overstimulated because there's so much happening. So all those things are still present. The first day of the show was great, and I was able to speak to a lot of people that I haven't been able to, of course, outside, but in person, which was really great. At an event that we ran on behalf of Whoop here last night, and also just walking around and running into the different people that I've met along the way and having conversations.
Let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Jeremy Powers. He is one of the winningest cyclists ever, cyclocross. Really, and I have to say, from what everybody says, you and I have never met in person, one of the nicest people in our sport.
Oh, well, that is a great compliment, and one that, thank you so much for saying. I try to think about life that way, Diane. I just don't see a lot of room for not trying to be outgoing, but you're right. My personality is definitely, I look at the glass half full as often as I can. And so I try my hardest to also put that forward and to bring people up, you know, as much as I can. And any door that I can open for someone, I try to.
That's perfect. Wonderful. And boy, I'll tell you, in the political and social environment right now, that is a good thing. So let's talk a little bit about Whoop. I'm an avid golf watcher, not golf player. And I noticed I think it was at the Ryder Cup that they were following a certain number of golfers with their Whoop trackers. Tell us what Whoop is and tell us what you do for them. You kind of told me, but I'd like to get a little more in depth. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is really fun. You were watching it on through the Ryder Cup, and essentially that was Whoop Live. So what the athletes are doing there is they're taking their heart rate that they're at, and they're broadcasting it live on to television or, you know, to do whatever platform you're watching from. So your live heart rate data is coming up, and you're seeing like different maybe physiological metrics. So, you know, it could be anything from how many hours that they've slept to other things. But Whoop essentially is a fitness wearable. So similar to a watch, but different than a watch. Whoop doesn't have like a face on it. It doesn't tell you the time. It doesn't do anything. It just collects your data and helps you understand kind of where things are going really well and where things maybe aren't, based on your insights and how much you want it to understand and how much it can learn about you. So you wear it like you do, but 24/7, it never has to come off. In fact, even the charging module slides right onto the top of it, and it will charge it while you keep it on. So you actually never need to take Whoop off if you don't want to. I do, but you don't ever really. And so it gives a very unique look into what someone is doing. And it helps you understand kind of, it's really a recovery tool. So Whoop, it's a huge question to ask, because what can Whoop do? Well, it can do a lot, Diane. but it's essentially a fitness tracker that can understand recovery and strain and output. And so it's different than maybe a power meter or how many steps you've done or something like that. Whoop quantifies things very simply for people in that it has three different levels: red, which is 0 to 33%, and then yellow, which is 34 to 66%, and then green, which is 67% and above. And so essentially, while it does track an enormous amount of things, it will simply give you a score, just like if you pulled up to a stoplight. It will tell you, hey, if you're in the red, perhaps you should hold back based on what we understand about what you've done and how you've been able to sleep and recover. And it'll also tell you if you're in the green, like, hey, this is probably going to be a really great day for you to take on some additional stressors and really push forward and try to get like a physiological adaptation to your training. Or if you wanted to do, something at work, or you had a really big day, you'd be primed to be able to do that based on what it understands of you. And then, not to keep going, but, you know, around sleep and things like that, it's really, really powerful to be able to help you understand how you can be more effective at getting into bed, what things are helping you go to sleep, what environments are doing this. And because we understand sleep is one of those things that's like, it's not always looked at as being the thing that you give the like to, or like, if you were like, oh, I did a 15 hour day and I rode 100 miles before I went to work, people would give that a like. But one of the things that I think Whoop is trying to change is around sleep hygiene, and understand that, hey, if I instead of that, it's like, hey, I got 9 hours of sleep and I meditated, we might maybe give that a like in the future, because that truly is how some of the best athletes in the world are really getting those 1% or 10% or 15%, is by really taking care of themselves and trying to, have good sleep hygiene and good sleep habits and take care of themselves.
So I have a question, and I totally agree. People really put sleep at the bottom of the list instead of where it belongs, which is kind of at the top. What about breathing and breath work? So I'm just finishing James Nestor's book, Breath. I'm a yoga instructor. Breath is a huge part of our practice. How does breathing and Whoop work? Does it track any kind of breathing work?
Whoop does, actually. So Whoop can track your respiratory rate, which is essentially like how much you breathe at night. And that's really, really cool for a lot of reasons. But one of them, especially during times like COVID, is where we see really unique and interesting details around how breath works. So we see this like pretty classic trend where someone that unfortunately contracted COVID would have a respiratory rate of, let's say, 15 breaths per minute. And then you're using Whoop and all of a sudden it goes from 15 to 18. And then within, you know, a day or so, you start to see, symptoms of illness. But that was where we really gained a lot of traction in the PGA, was around that happening. And some of the players being able to say, hey, I've noticed some really bad metrics on this thing that I'm wearing, which led to other conversations, which led to the entire PGA tour being on Whoop during COVID. So things like that are unique. And then when you talk about like yoga or meditating or breath work, we also know that one of the things that Whoop does really well, in fact, it's like secret sauce, if you will, is that while you're sleeping, it measures your heart rate variability, the small beats in between your heartbeat. So, you know, oh, well, my heartbeat's, 50 resting heart rate. And it's actually measuring the time in between those. And while you would think that that seems like, oh, of course it's the same, actually it's not. So it's the milliseconds in between each beat. And that is directly correlated to your psychophysiological well-being. And so when you talk about yoga and meditation, these types of things, HRV being directly correlated to them. And so when you think, well, what does that actually mean, Jeremy? Essentially, like when you meditate and you do yoga and things like that, you really ground yourself by taking a breath in, perhaps through your nose and then out through your mouth. And you work on this and you can sort of control your sympathetic nervous system through breath. And with HRV being so directly correlated, we know that this, like factually, that this can have a positive outcome on your HRV. And so without getting too into the weeds and making this too technical, simply put, Whoop is able to understand your HRV very well. And it can understand people that really do go out of their way to push that up, to take time to nurture that and to be really good. So when we see riders that have done an extreme effort, have really gone out, or any athletes, not just riders, any athlete that's gone all out, we see this really unique thing happen where they get so elated because of the accomplishment that they've achieved, that their HRV goes through the roof. And that's not unlikely or like once in a while. We see it all the time because people get so ecstatic about the accomplishment or about this big thing that they've overcome. And then we see their HRV go through the roof because their nervous system is just so stoked.
We're going to take a short break, but before we do, I'd like to know if Whoop is a subscription and you get the device with the subscription and then all the data is somewhere in the cloud. Is that how it works?
Yes, it is. So two things that came to mind there. One, with regards to data, everyone always wants to know, where's the data going? And one of the really things that's great about Whoop, is that none of your data, we don't do anything with your data. So when you sign up with Whoop, you can be rest assured that anything that's given is kind of secured and lives in the world where it's not being sold or there's not like a healthcare company behind it. We're privately owned and we don't have, we don't have any intentions and we're not able to take your data and do anything with it. That's a big, really big overarching theme at Whoop. And then around the business model, it is a membership. And while that's probably like, well, a lot of people are going towards memberships, what's cool is that we've just come out with a new device called the Whoop 4.0. And it is the latest and greatest. And if you can think of it like an iPhone 5 going to an iPhone, you know, 13 is essentially what it does. It's really is a step up from the 3.0. And it we're going to give those all away to our members that have more than 6 months of membership left on their time. We're going to be giving them all new 4.0s. And that the hardware is free. So when you sign up, you get a free Whoop. You don't buy it like an iPhone. It's kind of thinking a different way because everyone always wants new iPhones. It's like, oh man, the new one came out. I want a new one. So we just put that into our membership. So people sort of essentially come in to the system, and we try to also provide an experience that's that has consistent value. So we're always adding new features, and that's pushing us along to bring the best product that's possible. And we also think the way that the business model is that a membership also really drives like a community. And we have a lot of great community things within the app that allow people to chat, to look at, you know, oh, how did you sleep tonight? Like, hey, great job. Or, hey, looks like you were out tearing it up at the, you know, at the local music festival. How are you doing? And connect in that way. So there's a lot of, there's a bit of a social element too, but also a bit of just like I said, like kind of pushing someone up, like, hey, you're doing a really great job with your sleep, you know, keep it up kind of thing. And so, there's the membership. It's $18 a month if you sign up for over a year. It's $30 a month if you sign up for less than a year. It's a really fun and definitely unique business model, so to speak, and not traditional to cycling, at least at the moment.
People blow 18 bucks. Doing just what you're doing, having a cup of coffee right there,
yes.
You know, a couple days during the
That's
week.
Right.
So it doesn't sound like a lot of money. I thought it was a lot more expensive. And I know somebody who was very early on a Whoop subscriber. And so I've been very curious about it. How many members, do you have any idea of how many members Whoop has now? It must have a lot.
Yes, we don't have statistics that are publicly out, but the membership continues to grow. I can say that cycling is one of the extremely popular sports that's within Whoop.
Sure.
So cycling and running and golf, but we have just raised more money with SoftBank came in and put an additional $200,000 in and put the company at a almost $4 billion valuation, which is unbelievable. And we have like over 500 employees. So it's grown considerably since I've started, and it's continued to really break down like a lot of just, barriers that were in the way. So when I first started with Whoop in racing with it in 2017, it was just, very humble beginnings, and it's been such a cool product for me to use as an athlete when I was racing, and to learn like, how do I show up to be my best when I come to the start line, and to where it's gone now. There's so many even more powerful tools that, it's a really exciting and fun place to be. That's growing really quickly.
Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Jeremy about his nonprofit Jam Fund. And we're also going to ask him some opinions about cycling today. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
Children in poverty, each one unique, each one full of dreams. They're our hope, our future. They're the reason Children International exists. When the whole world changed, we developed new ways to reach children and families during these vulnerable times.
Tengo suficiente comida saludable.
Estoy sana y fuerte.
To learn more, go to children.org/help today.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm speaking with Jeremy Powers, the winningest cross racer on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. He is now retired. He works with Whoop. And if you just missed our conversation about what Whoop is and how it works, you need to rewind. So, Jeremy, one of the things that impressed me right away the last time we spoke, which was, again, 5 years ago, seems unbelievable, was your nonprofit, Jam Fund. It operates a little differently from what we think of as a nonprofit in cycling. Tell us about it, Jam, J-A-M, Fund.
Yeah, and Jam Fund was, of course, affected by the pandemic pretty badly. And also, Alec and Makunda's lives, just like mine, have changed considerably since that time, from both personal and business side. But we still troop along and we continue to go. I always like to think of it as an ebb and a flow. Like there's high tide and there's low tide. And I would say with regards to our ability to do things, it's been, low tide, if that's the bad side. It hasn't been like abundant because of the pandemic. But we have our charity event called the Grand Fundo. And the Fundo essentially has given out grants each year. Tens of thousands of dollars each year are given to riders in the area that show a lot of enthusiasm for the sport. And we try to write those grants to be able to help them to be able to get into whatever discipline of cycling that they want to participate in. And we try to focus on riders that are within, hours of our local community so that they can continue to be a part of the area. We do have a racing team also that goes out and is actively going to events this fall as well. And we are essentially like a little crew that has our own events. We help with a lot of events through the Northampton Cycling Club. So we're actively partnering with our big local cycling club. Alec and I both sit on the board of the Northampton Cycling Club. So we're active in that community as well. And we're essentially working to make cycling continue to be really sustainable and fun and something for everyone in our little area of Massachusetts.
So that brings me to my final topic, and that is your opinion about how cycling's going right now. So USA Cycling is having this inclusion conference series. We talk about diversity and equity and inclusion, and we still see bike prices very high when you can get parts and bikes. Do you see any trends about participation and how we can be more inclusive on the ground as opposed to sort of this cloud-based idea of we want to be this?
Mm. Yeah, it's a good question. And I think often about that. I mean, we, with Jam Fund in particular, we really try to help women. We've been doing that for honestly since the beginning. We've had an equally amount of, there's not generally as many women cycling as there are men. That's just a fact of the statistics. But the question is not that there aren't more women. How do we fix that? How do we make it more friendly towards women and towards people of color and from different backgrounds to be able to enjoy cycling, because it is predominantly like men and they're white. So it's like, how can we open this up and make this more inclusive? And I'm actually staying here next to the Williams brothers, who have done a great job at bringing the Legion of Los Angeles to life and showcasing the sport from their perspective and what they've gone through and the struggles that they've had to be able to get to the top of the sport and make it something that seems more palatable and more like, oh, that's something that I can do. I go back to, this is getting a little off the rails, but like cyclocross has been on GCN the last couple of weeks and I've been commentating, I've been course side, and my son watched the race and watched me commentate. And, and then we see on the little camera that we have outside that, he's out in the front picking his bike up and running up the side of the embankment of the house and then putting it down and then like trying to practice how he gets on. Very natural. He saw it on television. He thought it was cool and he went outside and he wanted to do it himself. As we often overthink things, we often think like, oh, we need to have a grandmaster's plan around what we might be able to do to invoke someone to do something. But the truth is that by just doing something is what I always say, it might be more meaningful. It's often people that don't take the first step to do something that means that nothing happens. So by doing something, by having this coverage, by the Williams brothers having their team, as a group, we're way more powerful. And I think that it's companies like Zwift, like SRAM, and so many others that are really pushing the envelope to uplift these stories of kind of the less represented group within cycling is only going to help. So it comes from all sides. It's the industry, it's the storytelling, it's the success of course, just the athletes and things like this, that all those things make and really push it up. And you asked another question about how I see the sport right now. And I think that the sport is in a very good place. And in fact, as we come out of the pandemic, I've been able to go to several events. I was at the World Cup, Mountain Bike World Cup in Snowshoe. And that was really well attended, again, outdoors. And people were really enjoying themselves, watching some of the best mountain bikers in the world come together and go head to head and battle. And then I've also been here at Sea Otter and I've seen this event where this is more community-based and in industry style. And there's a lot of people out here also enjoying themselves. So I think the stoke, if we'll say that, you know, for bikes is still very much well and alive. Like everything, I think we have a lot of work to do, but I'm always happy to be to watch and to learn and to also consider how can we be a part of that change. And, you know, like I said, if there's a door, I said this at the beginning, if there's a door that I can knock on and open up, then for sure I want to do that. And all of those things that you said kind of glean right back into that. I want to be able to help be a part of that. And it won't just be me or just you or just this one person, but as a group, we hopefully can push this along and continue to make it better for the years to come.
Well, Jeremy Powers, it's been wonderful talking with you again. What's on your plate after Sea Otter? Where are you going? What are you doing?
I'm going to be going from here to the Red Bull Rampage. I'm going to be checking out what's going on there, where the riders do all kinds of crazy backflips and stuff in the desert of Utah. And then I'm going to be going to the World Cup cyclocross event in Iowa. So I'll be doing those. And then I'm going to go home and lie in my bed. I'll be seeing my kids with a double mask on for a couple of days until I make it through the COVID protocols. And then after that, I'll be licking my wounds and sleeping a lot.
Sounds good to me. Well, it's been wonderful to catch up with you. Once again, we've been speaking with Jeremy Powers. And as far as Whoop goes, it's just whoop.com, WHOOP. So thank you so much. Have a safe trip back home when you get there. And if we're on the East Coast, maybe we'll catch up sometime.
Thank you so much for having me, Diane.
All right. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. My thanks to Jeremy for speaking with me today. If you're interested in learning more about Whoop, you could log on to Whoop. That's WHOOP.com. You can also find out more about the JAM Fund at jamcycling.org. So let's take a short break and we'll be back to learn about AeroTech Designs. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. You know, I don't usually tout a specific manufacturer or specific products. But today I break that rule to bring you a snapshot of a company that I think is worth a look-see. Starting back in the late 1970s, Kathy Rogers, née Schnabel, and that should ring a bell with some old-timers like me, couldn't find a cycling short for women. She taught herself to sew, others saw the shorts, and wanted a pair or two. Voila, Schnabel was born. Most of their production ended up being for other brands such as Descente and Nashbar. But when in 1974 NAFTA came along and manufacturing started to shift offshore, the company was out of business 17 months later. But like a phoenix rising out of the ashes and with a new style marketing idea, Kathy said, "Let's try this again." And today, we have AeroTech Designs. I'm going to also preface the conversation with the fact that AeroTech is not a sponsor of, nor does it support our podcast in any way, but I do buy and wear their cycling shorts. Hi, Ted and Steve. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week. How are you guys?
Very well. Thanks for having us, Diane.
My pleasure. So, Ted, tell me your position, and Steve, tell me your position with AeroTech.
So, Diane, I'm the director of operations, but in reality, I'm kind of running the show. Steve?
I'm the director of marketing, and I've been here since 2009 in that role.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been here for a while. I've been to all the shows all over the country. It's, you know, and other roles here are like managing the ad spends and working with the creative teams to get the messaging out to the customers.
You sound like you're from Pittsburgh.
Sure am.
We both are. We're both from here.
I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. You know,
that's okay.
Just being a smart ass. Okay. So I want to start with a little bit of background on the company, because most of your products are made here, which is a win-win in my opinion, and they're good products. And I will say, they did not pay me to say this, and they are not sponsors of the show. I wear AeroTech cycling shorts.
Yay!
So there. Okay. So tell us a little bit about the background of the company. I know, I guess it was your mom who started it, Ted?
Yeah, well, let's start way back when.
Okay.
Kathy Rogers is my mom. I'm the eldest of her three kids, all of which work here at AeroTech Design. So we truly are a family-run business. And Kathy grew up, and she grew up in Altoona, Pennsylvania, little town, central PA. And when she was a little girl, she went away to Girl Scout camp. And there at Girl Scout camp, they had learned to ride a bike. And she had never learned how to ride a bicycle. And she was determined in those few days to not only learn, but get good at riding a bicycle. And she always tells the story at that camp, she fell in love with riding bicycles. And when she got back, all she wanted to do was ride bicycles. And she kind of took that and ran, or pedaled away with it. And she started racing in amateur leagues in her teens. And then she rode at USF down in Florida in the Tampa region. And she was very much fully invested in cycling. And, you know, in those days in the late 70s, there was absolutely no apparel for women. And she decided she wanted a pair of bike shorts. And she taught herself how to sew and bought swimsuit material and leather chamois from Men's Pads and constructed a rudimentary bike short for women. And, you know, she loved it, and she made several pairs, and she would go to these events and people said, "Hey, that's pretty neat. I want one of those." And, you know, the snowball avalanche kind of comes from that. And she started to get some real outpouring from the cycling community, not only women, but men too, for a high quality American made piece of cycling apparel. And she started with my father, a company called Schnaubelt Shorts.
No kidding.
Yes, that was my mother's maiden name.
Schnaubelt. Who knew?
So they started Schnaubelt Shorts, and that company was around for several years. They were not the same business models we are now. So what they did then is they did a lot of third-party manufacturing work for big names like Nashbar and Descente. And in 1994, as many historians will note, NAFTA happened, and it shifted a lot of the manufacturing out of the United States. They were out of business within 16 months after NAFTA passed. So that was the end of that chapter. And then it came around that, hey, you know, we could build a new business model. We can still do this, but we have to be smarter about how we do it. And we have to build a brand. We have to create value from building this high quality brand. And so she decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to start this. I'm going to give this another try. But what we're going to do is we're going to manufacture the products, and I'm going to deliver it right to the people that wear it. So we're going to skip the distribution networks. We're going to skip the big box stores. We're not going to make stuff for other people's brands. And we're going to focus on building a brand, an encompassing brand of American made apparel. Therein, AeroTech Designs was born. So we created this idea that we can build value through our branding and through our high quality products, fully vertically integrated from raw bolts of fabric all the way down through the manufacturing process, inventory, distribution, and customer service at the end, direct to the consumer, manufacturer, direct to consumer, all the way down through. And that gives us the ability to keep margin and compete with Asian manufacturers of apparel.
And this is like 2007, around then. And, you know, her vision was to sell it through the internet, which the internet was a lot different in 07 than it is today.
True
so
that.
That was pretty forward thinking of her too at that time.
So I'd like to reintroduce you to, and then move on to some of the things that AeroTech is doing. And then I have a couple of comments about what you just told me, Ted. We're speaking sure. with Ted Rogers and Steve Ewing from AeroTech Design. They are in Pittsburgh, and If you don't know the company, we will give you the information at the end of the conversation about how to find out about their apparel and the things that they make. I, for one, am very impressed with the product. Again, I wear Aerotech shorts. I have friends who have bought your jackets and love them. And that was what brought me back to you as a new product that we're going to talk about. Maybe it's not brand new, but it's new to me, the Eclipse jersey. But I want to go back to something that you said about just this sort of goes around, comes around that NAFTA killed Schnabel, which it did for a lot of companies in the U.S. So I'm trying to figure out how Kathy pulled herself up and said, we're not going to let this like knock us down and take us out. So what was it that put that fire back under her? I'm sure it knocked the wind out of her for a while.
Yeah, it sure did. And to be forward in saying that, there was about 12 years in between. So she started a second career as a teacher. And there's nothing like teaching kids to get you to figure out what you really want to do.
You think?
I think when she decided to go back to school, she was a technology teacher, and she was teaching word processing. And at some point she taught at Mount Lebanon, which is a pretty good school in the region. And they started asking her to teach a class on developing web pages. And so she learned and developed web pages. And that's kind of what got the whole thing rolling again. Said, hey, people are really getting access direct to other people and getting their thoughts, their ideas out there in a much greater web than previous. So I think that she said, hey, I can still do this.
And so she has and done it well. So let's talk about some of the apparel. It is getting to be cooler. All the leaves are changing and they're hitting the ground. So I noticed something about a product called the Eclipse jersey. I want to know the features of it and then how it works.
Yeah, the Eclipse jersey is our brand new pullover style. It's a 3/4 zip with a reflective zipper. The main feature of this jersey is its UV protection. It's rated at UPF 50 plus, and we actually had the fabric sent out to a third party and tested to, you know, confirm that. And it's rated like that because of the weave of the fabric. It's a tighter weave and it's a higher thread count. So like that pretty much is blocks the sun rays from getting through. To give you a comparison, like a cotton t-shirt would have a UPF rating of about 5. So this fabric's it's tighter weave and it's just, you know, it's literally just, it's not even like a coating or anything. It's just more fabric.
What's the breathability of it?
I mean, it's an athletic style shirt. It's polyester, so it's very breathable, and it dries fast. Is, you know, what you would expect. You know, pretty much any jersey to perform like.
Does it have rear pockets?
Yeah, we put 3 rear pockets on this one.
So it's like a regular jersey, only it's a UV ray, like keep you from getting sunburn. And people don't think about getting sunburn in the fall, but you know, we can start out with a 40 degree morning, end up with a 70 degree afternoon and you know, have the sun blaring down on you.
60, 70 degrees, the rays can still be strong.
Right.
You know? So, right. I mean, you could wear this jersey in the summer. You know, if you're moving on the bike, you could, you know, wear it and be comfortable, you know, if it's 80 outside.
Diane, the reason why we created this product is because we got a lot of feedback from cyclists directly saying that they want something to protect them from the sun's rays. A lot of the feedback that we were getting said, hey, look, I don't mind wearing long sleeves in the summer. Like, it's not the problem. It's more about trying to keep myself safe. And as you see more people spend time outside and the awareness of some of the damaging capabilities of the sun with the UVA and UVB rays, people are becoming more aware that sunscreen maybe isn't the best option, that totally blocking out the sun rays can be a healthier way to spend time outdoors safely.
Well, and I know people buy sun sleeves, so they're buying something that already is recreating the jersey, and this has got to be easier. I mean, those things have elastic at the top and they're whatever. So I want to talk about one other thing, and that's your sizing, because One of the big issues with imported apparel, especially if it comes from Europe, is that it might say 2X and it might fit a medium. So you actually have real sizing and it goes up to 5X, which I think is amazing. So tell us how your sizing works.
We do real American sizing. So you
beer belly sizing.
Yeah. You compare, there's three primary sizing groupings that we've noticed. The American style, the European style, and the Asian style. And American's going to be the largest and Asian's going to be the smallest. So when you look at the differences, an American large could be a 2XL or even a 3XL in an Asian size. So, I mean, that's a huge difference. But yeah, we have a full size range. I mean, we create some hilariously small jerseys for little kids, almost on a vanity sense, that they're so small and cute, all the way up to the 5XL talls that are just absolutely well-built, fantastic pieces of apparel for someone who would need that size range.
So you're saying you make a tall available as well as XLs and, you know, up to 5XL?
Yes.
And the tall is one of the areas we've been heavily expanding our product offerings in recently. Like we're starting to, all our normal products that we always offered, we're starting to add talls to them.
My XL tall husband will be very excited because that's the problem. You know, the sleeves are too short, or it's too short at the waist. It needs to come down further and cover a little more.
Our tall shorts have an 11-inch inseam on them. For the most part. So it kind of gives you an idea of when a normal inseam is about in the 9 range for men.
Oh, tall shorts. I didn't even, you know, I'm thinking here tops, but of course.
And tights. We have tall tights and jack. I mean, we have everything available in tall at this point.
How about women's sizing?
So our women's sizes are also, we go up to 4X most of the time for in women's and down to extra small. And, you know, it's the same concept. They're going to fit. Like we always say, like, you know, if you go to the store and you buy a medium t-shirt, you should be able to get a medium jersey from us. Like there shouldn't be any question in like what size you order.
I think that's going to be a really big selling feature, especially with online, where you're not walking into a retail establishment and trying something on, which used to be one of the annoyances. Having a big retail store is that you'd have everything and it would get picked over either so quickly, or manufacturers didn't ship your full size run. And that kind of screwed things up. How about inventory? So raw materials, I don't know where yours come from and you know, what the process is, but you seem to be fairly in stock on everything.
Well, I appreciate that, Diane. It's nice to hear that. You know, for us, it's always an uphill battle to keep things in stock. You know, that's one of the most important things about our supply chain that we really work hard and focus on. One of the reasons why we are better suited to keep things in stock is because we control our manufacturing in-house and with a few very select partners here in the United States. We try to get as much of our raw materials from the United States. And actually we're pushing an effort right now to reshore some of our fabric distributors. There's actually in your neck of the woods, Ohio company that's offering a very similar fabric to what we use on several of our products that we don't have to get from Taiwan any longer. We can get it from Ohio.
Where?
So, you know, I don't know which part of Ohio, but I can find that information. We can give it to you.
I'm just curious that, you know, we talk about American made components all the time. And, you know, the drivetrain is the biggest issue. But to hear that there's American made fabric, because as I remember, and Ohio especially, when, you know, carpets were made in the U.S. and socks were made in the U.S. and all kinds of things were made, cotton out of the South and, you know, all of that. As you said, NAFTA kind of killed a lot of those industries. To hear that anybody's doing it is wonderful. Verywall is making tubing here in Ohio, for example, for bikes.
We also found a foam supplier out of Ohio and we worked with them to make a chamois pad.
Foam? I thought you said phone, and I'm going to go,
Foam.
Oh, Maxwell Smart, a phone in your shorts. Very cool. Let me remind our listeners, once again, we're speaking with Ted and Steve from Aerotech Design in Pittsburgh, and we're making fun of ourselves, which is okay, too.
So, we're having a good time.
We are having a good time. Tell me a couple of the other fall products, because, you know, leg warmers, arm warmers, jackets, those kinds of things, what you guys are offering, tights.
One of our flagships, which is a newer product from, well, about, it's probably been out about a year now. It's called the Aero Reflective Rain Jacket. This jacket has a removable hood and removable sleeves. So you can either take it down and use it, like take the sleeves off, put it in the back pocket. Now you have a vest, or for extra breathability, you can just crack the sleeves open and get some, you know, extra pit vent going on. It's covered in a reflective material. So it's a safety yellow jacket. Well, it's a yellow jacket with black accents. And then whenever a car light hits it, the whole thing lights up, but like, it doesn't look like a reflective material jacket. Like it's kind of hidden. It's been one of our best selling rain jacket right now.
How does that launder?
It's standard. I mean, I would hang to dry.
Yeah. Well, we hang all cycling clothes to dry.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to protect the beading. And there is a coating on it too, to make it waterproof. So, you know.
So it's water repellent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because waterproof tends to get too hot no matter what you do. That sounds like a cool jacket. Is that made for men and women?
Yes. However, it is one of the products that we import. So we do some importing here. And normally it is in the categories of gloves and jackets. However, with that being said, 2 years ago, we developed a soft shell jacket that we make right here too. So we have, like, as we get the technology to make higher end products, jackets and outerwear, we want to make things here, but we also want to have a nice offering to the customer too.
How many people work at Aerotech?
We have 33 employees currently at Aerotech Designs, and each and every single one of them is part of our family. We really cherish our employees here, and we do a lot of different things culturally, internally, to celebrate our employees and to give them chances to ride their bike. And we do little luncheons and then make it take the half day off to ride their bike and things like that. So we were a small company, and everybody knows everybody, and it really is a fantastic place to work for everybody. And just as a note of that, since we kind of got moving in 2008, we've never lost a manager in our company. Every single person that we've gotten to come work here has stayed.
Well, that says something about the environment. We have one more thing to talk about. Anything new on the drawing board for 2022 that you can talk about? You don't have to give me any company secrets.
Well, we always have things coming out that are brand new and exciting here at Aerotech Designs, Diane.
All right. Well said.
You know, right now we're really looking into how can we become more environmentally friendly? And that's a big initiative right now for us. Mainly, like, how can we make our products out of either recycled materials? How can we, use less plastic in our packaging? So those are some of the questions that we're asking right now that are driving our decisions for the future. A lot of companies are doing that right now, and we all think it's, you know, we're right there and in the thinking of, like, that's where we need to be thinking and what we can do to make a better product and better world for everyone here, better community.
How often do you think you get a suggestion or question or comment from a client or a customer that you've taken and turned it into something? Does that happen?
All the time.
All the time.
I read every review that is written on a product every day.
Sometimes rereading them multiple times.
And, you know, if there's an idea or a question or concern, we talk about it. We really do. I mean, I can say that without any doubt of that. So yeah, I mean, we truly do listen to the customer, and that's one of my, and since we're so, like, we're mobile, since we make everything here, we can react, and the batches in the warehouse are, you know, we control how many are in there. So we can, as soon as that batch is up, if there's a tweak to a product, it's changed almost instantly.
Nice. All right, let's do it. Tell my listeners how they can find out more about AeroTech Designs.
Yeah, we're available on the web at www.aerotechdesigns.com. We're not in any stores. So if you want to learn more about us, you need to go there or to our Facebook or Instagram page and see what's going on here.
And sign up for our email list.
Is there a special way of doing it? Is there just a link on the site for that?
Yeah, at the bottom of the in the footer, you can sign up or you can click the join the club on the side of any page.
And if you want to read more about us, there's a really good about us section on our website at the bottom. And I highly recommend you clicking through.
And there's a video.
It talks about who we are as a company. It talks about our mission, our vision, our values, our promise to the customer. And part of that promise to the customer, as you said, Diane, is that two-way feedback. And we really like to hear back from our customers about what they think about our products and how we can make them better. And it's so important to our design team to get that feedback so that we could be the best version of ourselves to provide our customers with the most comfort on the bicycle.
Wonderful way to end the conversation. We've been speaking with Ted Rogers and Steve Ewing from AeroTech Design in Pittsburgh. I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me today. We will put all these links up on the blog, and you can listen to the show this coming weekend. Thank you both so much. I hope you have a wonderful fall riding season.
Yeah, thank you.
Diane, thank you so much for having us.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My thanks to Ted Rogers and Steve Ewing for joining me today. Log on to AeroTech Designs for more information on the company, their products, and sign up for their newsletter. My thanks, of course, also to Jeremy Powers. I always love talking with him. I'll be back next week with a brand new show, and in the meantime, why not join one of our conversations on our Facebook page? Or log on to OutspokenCyclist.com and see photos, links, and show notes for each episode. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, stay well, and remember, there is always time for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We welcome your thoughts and contributions on our Facebook page, or visit OutspokenCyclist.com to leave a comment on any episode. We will be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app and you'll never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.